So today we'll talk, so I will just remind you, I know that you had already a class about mixed reality, but I will just remind you what I mean when I say mixed reality. I will also give you a quick overview about how we interact in mixed reality, because this will be useful for the rest of the class. And in particular for collaborative interaction on this kind of thing. So I know that you had a class about virtual reality, but just to be that all of us are on the same page. Maybe not all of you already had a class about virtual reality. Did you all have the class about virtual reality? Maybe not the M1 International? That's why I have this just brief summary about what is virtual reality and how we interact in virtual reality. Then we'll talk about what is collaboration in mixed reality. So we'll talk about remote collaboration, co-located collaboration. I will define this more in detail later. And we'll talk about awareness on communication between users in this kind of collaboration. And finally, we will finish with all the stuff about collaborative interaction. So I start first with this with the introduction about mixed reality. So when we talk about mixed reality, there will be several stuff involved in this mixed reality context. The more the first one that we think about is virtual reality. So I guess you all of you heard about virtual reality, but it's sometimes a bit fuzzy what is really virtual reality. So I will try to briefly explain what I mean by virtual reality. So the first thing is you have a virtual environment. So a virtual, what we call a virtual environment, is in fact a 3D world simulated by a computer. So you see here, like, all the information, especially the visual information that you can see, are computed by computers, and it's why we call it virtual. So in the first thing, we have this virtual environment, and then we will want to immerse a user inside this virtual environment, and also enable this user to interact in real time through various devices. And when we talk about immersion in the virtual environment, we talk about multi-sensorial perception of the virtual environment. So of course there is a visual thing, you will see the virtual environment, but you also may want to hear the virtual environment, to touch the virtual environment. So for those who attend to the virtual reality class, you probably saw stuff about haptic force feedback to touch the virtual object, for example, or this kind of thing. So I will not go too much in detail in this part, but just to give you the sense, it's important to remind that it's multisensorial. It's not only visual. Most of the time when we think about virtual reality, we think about visual perception of the virtual environment, but it's not only visual. So if we want to have a figure that represents virtual reality, we can use this one. So in one hand, we have a user. We start with the user. And on the other hand, we have the virtual environment computed by some computer, maybe several computers, that do like what we call usually rendering of the virtual environment. And in between the user and the virtual environment, we will have a set of various devices that will enable the user first to perceive the virtual environment, so maybe some display to be able to see the virtual environment, some speaker to be able to hear the virtual environment, but also to act on the virtual environment. So here there is some basic input, but you could have even more elaborate input with tracking of the user or this kind of thing. And then we have what we call action perception loop. So the idea is that the user will perceive a point of view on the virtual environment, and it will have an impact on how we act on the virtual environment. And on the other hand, how we act in the virtual environment will modify what he perceives from the virtual environment. That's why we call it a loop, because it's looping in this way. So what I'm doing in the virtual environment changes what I perceive, and of course what I perceive changes the way I interact. Now, so if we continue in this big, what we call mixed reality family, we can also talk about augmented reality. So I'm sure you also heard about augmented reality. So the idea is that we don't have only a virtual environment now, but we have a real environment and a virtual environment. And we want mainly to add virtual information on the real environment. So it could be used in various ways, but like some very usual ways. For example, here you have an accommodation, not accommodation. Want you want to buy a flat? I don't know the immobilier. Someone knows the what? Yeah, accommodating app where you want to see all the flats that you can buy or rent and see the price. So here, for example, when you you use your cell phone to record this building, you will see the price and the and maybe the price of the and the availability of the flat. Here you have the classical augmented reality app where you have, for example, a baseball card, and when you record it with a cell phone, a smartphone, or on some special AR device, you will see a 3D model that pop up on top of the card. This is what we call augmented reality, and there is more and more glasses that are dedicated to augmented reality, so it's also growing up. But then I will ask you a question. So how can we really define the boundaries between virtual reality and augmented reality? So if someone has an idea how we can settle the limit between the two. Yes?
In augmented, you see the real world. In virtual reality, you don't see the real world.
OK, yeah, that's probably one option. But then I will argue, what about this kind of application? For example, here you have a virtual meeting room, but you see a real video of the remote person. So is that virtual reality, augmented reality? What? it depends. I heard augmented, I heard virtual reality, yes?
It's a spectrum, so you can't have one or the other.
Exactly. So that was my point here. So the boundary between real and virtual can be a bit fuzzy. So of course, it's clear what is augmented reality, it's clear what is virtual reality, but in the between, you have many kind of applications that do weird things and that are a bit in between. So this one is an example because you have, I would say more, you have a virtual reality environment, everything is virtual, but in addition, you have some elements from the real world that show up inside this virtual environment. So it's a bit in between. And some people call it, in that case, augmented virtuality, which sounds a bit weird. But the idea of augmented virtual reality is to integrate elements from the real world in the virtual environment, so as this video, for example. So you can integrate video feed, but you can integrate also a real object. So you can be in a virtual environment, but touching maybe a real table, because you have put in the room a real table, you are wearing a VR headset. But still, you feel the real object inside the room. So in that case, you have a link with the real environment. You can also use the user position. So when the user walks in the real environment, you use it to create some motion in the virtual environment. So there is still some link. There is always a bit some link between the real and the virtual. So and as you say, then we call about a spectrum or continuum. This continuum has been introduced by Paul Mingram quite a long time ago now. And the idea was to say that there is not only a real augmented reality on one side and virtual on the other side, but it's really a spectrum. In one end, you have the real environment. On the other end, you have the virtual environment. And in between, you have a bunch of applications like augmented reality, augmented virtual reality, and so on. So if I can show you some examples, so if we look at this end of the spectrum, we could have a real virtual virtual reality application. So like you are really in a virtual environment, you don't see anything about the real environment. On the other end, you could have augmented reality. So already in augmented reality, you could have differences between the applications. So the one where you show additional information is the real environment is really close to the real one. But then you start to have, for example, here, it's a bit small maybe, but you have a 3D character on the table, a 3D virtual character on the table next to you while you are designing. So it's a bit closer, I think, to the virtual world because it's already 3D model, 3D virtual object. And then you can have, for example, this example, it's I think an example from Microsoft where you can play Minecraft in your living room with augmented reality, and you have plenty of blocks from Minecraft around you in your living room. So it's a bit closer again to the virtual environment. So you see already we have some differences. And in the same way in augmented virtual reality, you can have also several levels. So this one is an example of an application that try to overcome the issue which appear when you are in a virtual reality application with a headset. The issue is that you cannot see anything of the virtual of the real world. Sorry. So in that case, they propose several solutions to help you to interact with real object while you are looking. A virtual reality scene through a virtual reality headset. And there is several applications here, and all of them are have a position on this continuum. So for example, here you can just have a video of your hand on the real object in the real world. Here, I think they segment only the interesting object, so you have a segmenting real view of the keyboard, of the mug, of the donut here. And the last option is you only see the real world around your hand if you want to be able to grab the donut here, for example. But yeah, so this is just an example, but to show you that there is several positions in this continuum according how much you reveal from the real environment. So I will stop here for the kind of definition of mixed reality. Maybe just in quick, what are the applications of mixed reality? So you probably know some of them. There is more and more application of mixed reality, and it's really growing up a lot. So it's not an exhaustive list of all the applications, but it's just a few examples. So virtual reality and mixed reality could be used for example, scientific data analysis. So for example, here you have you have the turbulence behind the wing of the plane. And if we look at this image in 2D, it's very hard to understand how the turbulence goes in the air. So I think it's easy to understand if you look at this phenomena in 3D and you really see the turbulence. It's much more easier to understand this phenomena. There is also a lot of application in industry. For example, in car industry, it could be both for design of the car. So for example, here you have an example of before creating the real car, they create a virtual car and they make the people sit inside the virtual car and drive the virtual car. So it's quite convenient because if you see that something is wrong with this virtual car, you can easily change it. But if you have built the real car, then it starts much more complicated to change it. So now they are doing more and more prototyping in virtual reality before building the first physical prototype of the car. So I follow some students that work at the virtual reality center of PSA. So PSA is the one that build Peugeot and Citroën cars. And I think they told me that during the design of a car that lasts around 2 years, they make more than 100 work session in virtual reality to assess the design of the car. So it's really something that is not research anymore. It's really used in the design process of the car. So it's used for designing the car, but it's also used for creating the fabrication process. So they train people also to build the car in virtual before doing it in real. So it's good because it's possible to check that it will be easy to assemble the car, for example, or to put painting on the car. So they do that in virtual first, and then they can adapt the assembly line according to the studies they have done in virtual reality. It's also good for training, education. So for example, here you have the simulation of, I think, a nuclear strike or something like that. And of course, it usually don't happen very often. So that's why firemen try to train to this kind of event in virtual reality. I forgot about this one. This one was about a fabrication process. Also, it's very interesting because here you have the assembly line of a plane, I think, an Airbus plane. And something that is very interesting in virtual reality is that you can display some information that you cannot display in the real world. So here, for example, we display the comfort zone where this worker can manipulate object. And we see that, for example, here we are asking him to tune something outside of the comfort zone. And so it means that there is an issue. So you need to adapt your assembly line before starting to build the plane, because otherwise it would be very, very tiring for worker to do this manipulation outside of the comfort zone. In addition of training and education, it could be used also for phobia therapy, rehabilitation. So here, it's an example for people that have a brain, brain injuries. And for the beginning, after the accident, it's very hard for them to do simple tasks of everyday life, like doing some shopping here. And so they train them to do it in virtual reality. And for example, the interest here of virtual reality is that you can control really the full environment. So at the beginning, if it's very difficult, you just ask them to find a very simple shopping items. But then you start to make it more complicated. You had some people walking around in the shop, and so on. So you see, you can really manage the complexity of the virtual environment and complexity of the task here. And of course, it's used a lot for all entertainment things. So I think you know about video games. There is more and more arcade rooms that propose a virtual reality setup. So you can play game with virtual reality headset or this kind of thing. You can do some virtual visit of a museum. And also, it's interesting for social communication, like telepresence. And we talk a bit about that in the context of the collaboration part. So that's all for the introduction about mixed reality. I will switch now on kind of quick overview about all the interaction, how you interact in mixed reality. So basically, you have three kinds of interaction techniques. So the first one is you want to manipulate the objects that are inside the virtual environment. It's what we call interaction. The second one is you want to manipulate the viewpoint, your viewpoint usually in the virtual environment. So it's what we call navigation. You just move inside the virtual environment. And the last one is application control. Also, by the way, so here I put a very complete references about all interaction technique in 3D. So it's a book that is called 3D User Interface, Theory and Practices. So this is very the basic book for all 3D interaction. And by the way, I don't know if you saw, but I send you by email, I don't know if all of you receive it, but an email with a link to be able to download the slide. So yeah, I think you should have received it just before the class, during my lunch break, I send you the link. So even if you don't receive it, it's not a big issue, because I think Michel will set up a website with all the content of the class later on. But in the meantime, I wanted you to have the slide if you want to annotate the slide or check it. To come back on interaction, so we have these three kind of interaction. So we have object manipulation, viewpoint manipulation, and control application. So I will start first with navigation. So there is several stuff in navigation. So the first one is you want to move your viewpoint. So you want to move in the virtual environment. And sometimes, it depends of course of the application, you will also want to modify your scale. So if it's what we call a multi-scale virtual environment, where you want to maybe explore, like I have an example, you want to explore the human body. So you want to explore the full size of the human body, but maybe you want to dig into more detail and go back to the cells level to see some small details. So in that case, you will have to change the kind of zoom level of the virtual environment. When you want to manipulate the viewpoint, there is two options. You can manipulate your own viewpoint, so then it makes you possible to move in the virtual environment. But we'll see that in the collaborative case, maybe it would be interesting also to manipulate the viewpoint of the other. So maybe you will drive someone in the virtual environment, or you will make him possible to join you at some point in the virtual environment. So in that case, we will see that we have also some collaborative navigation. And in addition of really moving the viewpoint, the navigation include also what we call path finding. So the idea is to find your path in the virtual environment. So I will not go into detail of this part, but just to know that it exists. And you can find more stuff about that in the book or in research paper. So it's how you can find your path in the virtual environment. So it include, of course, some small maps of the virtual environment. We'll see an example about what we call world in miniature, where you have a small version of the virtual environment, and you can also it can also help you to find your path. But I will not talk more in detail about that. So now, if we want to classify the navigation technique, we have several categories. So the first one is what we call egocentric technique. So egocentric means that it's related to the user itself. And in that case, you have several metaphors. So usually, here very quickly, so the walking metaphor. So it's like you are walking in the virtual environment. But you can have also some other metaphor, like flying metaphor, where you can travel also up and down. And driving metaphor in a lot of applications, it could be interesting to use some vehicles. So for example, here you have an example of a bicycle application, where you will bike on a real bike, and it will help you to move inside the virtual environment. So this is what we call the driving metaphor. The walking metaphor, there is two examples here. So here you really walk on the real world, and we make you walk on the virtual environment. And in that case, we can use some techniques that are called redirect walking, because of course, in the real world, you don't have an unlimited space to walk. So in that case, we can, for example, here, make you walk in a curve instead of a straight path. And maybe we can make you walk in a circle. And we can deform your vision to make you feel that you are walking straight, even if you are walking in a circle. And there is a lot of study about that and how you can make the people walk in an indefinitely in a virtual environment, even if the space in the real room has a lot of constraint. Another option is like here. So you have a cave here where you have a treadmill on the floor. So as you walk, we move the treadmill, so you stay always inside the virtual environment. So this is like real walking. But of course, we can also use more less complicated and more abstract way to move. So for example, you have something that they call human joystick. So the idea, you are laying on a kind of movable platform here. And if you lay in front of you, you will move forward. If you lay backward, in the back, you will move backward, and the same for the side. This is one option, but you can also have very simple way to move, like the joystick or a game controller. This is also, it's also working. Of course, it's in that case, we'll say that it's less immersive. You are less immersed in the virtual environment because you don't really feel that you are acting as if you are walking, but it also could be a solution. So the second category is egocentric technique. So in that case, the navigation is not related to the user, but it's related to the environment. So for, I will show you a video here of NaviJet, where instead of moving your point of view, you are positioning a point of view relatively to the object of the virtual environment. So you will see in the video, you have here, you, so you, you select a point in the virtual environment, and you have a small camera that will show up, and you will modify the position of the small camera to create a new point of view, and when you are done, you will be moved at this point of view. So it's a way to navigate related to the environment. And the second one is the technique which is called grabbing the air. The interest of this technique is really to reduce motion sickness, because you will grab, instead of moving yourself in the virtual environment, you will grab the virtual environment and you will move it to you. So I can show you some example in videos. So maybe I can put some, I don't know. So here it's like the classic way what you have to do if you are not using their technique. So you have to pan, zoom, move in, move out, rotate, which could be quite tiring and leads to some issue. So for the application, they develop what they call NaviJet. So this technique that I showed you before, where you can select object and position a point of view. So we will just see just after that. So there are several ways to implement the technique, but yeah, here, they, for example, they select the object. So you have this small sphere that appear, and you are moving the, it, we'll see it better, I think, later. So you have here a small camera that you can move and help you to position your point of view related to the object. I think I can. I can speed up a bit the video. Here you have, it's interesting because you have an overview of what will be your viewpoint after. So it's like, it helps you to position the viewpoint. So you see what will be your viewpoint when you will be teleported. Well, I think I don't go more in detail. And this second one is an example of the grabbing the air technique, where you grab the environment to move it to you. So here we see it grabs the environment, and this is quite efficient in some case to reduce the motion sickness, because maybe you heard about motion sickness. It's an issue that you have with especially virtual reality headset, because your body is not moving, and you see some image that make you feel that you should move. So then your brain doesn't really understand and makes you dizzy. And in that case, it's very efficient to reduce motion sickness, because you don't feel like you are moving, you feel like the environment is moving to you, and it reduces a lot the motion sickness. So I will speed up a bit maybe, because this is not the main part of the class. So here we also have what we call assisted navigation technique. It's more that you select a destination, either by pointing, either by using a world in miniature, so it's kind of small map of the virtual environment, or by using a list of defined paths, and then you will be moved to your destination. So the more classic one is you use teleportation, so you are directly teleported to the destination, but you can also have some more complex way to move to your destination. So I will not go more in detail. Maybe I show you the video, because the video is quite old school video of virtual reality. You like you see it's 95. So you see that we already had HMD at this time, a bit bigger than what we have now, but we'll see. So what is interesting here, it has a kind of small world in miniature, where it can, for example, here is moving some object inside the virtual environment, but by using this world in miniature. So all the interaction is doing in the virtual environment. Oops, I wanted to pause it. You see that? That's quite efficient because you can move directly the object in the board in miniature, and you don't have to travel all around to move the object. So we'll see it again in the video. So for example, he's moving this object here in the world in miniature, and it's moving in the real virtual environment. And the second thing that is interesting, you will try to move here. We will see there is a small object that represents the point of view of the user. So he will move his own point of view in the world in miniature, and you see he will be moved to the destination. Of course, the graphism is quite old, but the main idea is still very interesting and is still used in our days. So here it's another version where you have two world in miniature, so one for one room and one for another room. And then you can move objects from one room to another using this miniature version of each room. So I don't go more in detail. The last thing is about navigation is we have also, like I say, multi-scale navigation, where you want to modify your size. So you have two ways to do that. The first one is to consider the scale as an additional degree of freedom. So you have a translation, rotation in the virtual environment, but you can also change your scale. So become bigger, become smaller, to create a kind of zoom in the virtual environment. So of course this is possible, but this is quite complicated for the user. Usually it's very difficult to navigate in the virtual environment, but at the same time change your scale. So most of the people try to use some automatic scale modification technique. So for example, I explained you this idea of the body. So you want to explore the human body to understand how the different organ works and everything. And you see that you have some bounding box here. And you can use a magnifying glass to enter each bounding box or have more detail. And of course, you can exit to get an overview. So in that way, you can explore the human body here in that case and understand all the thing inside. There is another technique that is called scaled word grab, where you can select an object, and then it will change the size of your virtual environment in a way that you can directly manipulate the object by hand, and when you release, the object will come back in the virtual environment. So it's a way to have everything accessible around you, and you don't have to move in that case. So I stop here for navigation, and I switch now to what we call manipulation, object manipulation. So I will go quickly, and I will not detail all the techniques that you. There is a lot of technique to be able to interact with a virtual object. I will really try to go quickly here because it's not the main point. But so the first classical one is you have a virtual hand. So it means that you have a virtual version of your hand, and you can grab object and move object with this virtual hand. But then people start to think, okay, we can grab object around me, but if I still want to grab objects that are far away, I still have to move, grab the object, come back, and that could be very annoying. So people say, why can we not take advantage that we are in a virtual environment to be able to manipulate object at a distance? And it's like, if we think about it, it could be very efficient to don't have to move and be able to manipulate object at a distance. So they implement several techniques. For example, here the go-go metaphor is the idea that at the beginning your virtual hand is close to your physical hand, but when you move further, the virtual hand will go much more further away, and in this way you'll be able to send your virtual hand further to grab object. In the same way, you can have a kind of 3D cursor that is that could be a way to grab object at a distance. And I think one of the most common one is the virtual ray. So the virtual ray, the idea of the virtual ray is to use the ray as a laser pointer, and that helps you to grab object far away. We'll see an example in a video just after. And another example is what we call image plane selection, and we start to see this happening more and more, especially with augmented reality headset, where you can select object on what we call the image plane, so it's what you see, basically. And you can use several techniques. So there is several examples, but maybe, for example, you can put your finger under and above an object, and in that way it will select the object. Or you can touch, put your finger on top of the object, or different other techniques. And I think I will show you some quick example of that. So this one is the interaction with the virtual ray. So we see the user here. We don't see it because we don't have the perspective of the user, but the virtual ray is it's supposed to be displayed starting from the hand of the user, and it make it possible to grab objects that are far away. Or to send it further away. So the manipulation of object plane is here. You have an example here. So he will put his finger above and under some object and be able to select this object like that. So for example, here he will select some bottle. And with the second hand, he will perform additional manipulation, like grab the object, rotate it or scale it, I don't know, scale it, and maybe put it back. So this is like a quick overview of all the basic techniques, but of course, this selection and manipulation technique are not always suitable for manipulation. For example, the virtual array is very efficient to select object because I can just point object. It's efficient also to move object, but then to rotate object could be very annoying. So for example, if I try to grab the table over there, of course I can grab it. But then if I want to rotate the table, it starts to be very annoying because I need to grab the table, move it a bit, release it, grab it again, move it a bit, and you see that it's very hard to rotate the table in that case. So some people had the idea to combine several interaction tools together. So for example, I can use the virtual array to select the table, but then I can use my second hand to make the rotation on this virtual object. So I grab the table, and then I rotate it, and the rotation will be transmitted to the table. Another option is what we saw in the video before. You can move also the manipulated object close to the user. So I select the table, it comes close to me, I manipulate it, and then I can release it and come back to the initial position. And the last option is to attach some interaction tool directly on the object. So it's a bit similar to what you see in Unity, where you have some tool to translate, rotate, scale, the different object. And the last thing about multi-object, the last thing is sometimes also you don't want to manipulate one object. And we'll see here in this video, they propose a solution to manipulate several objects at a time, which is quite convenient in some case. So we'll see this work has done very nice stuff about interaction and collaboration, and we will see several examples of this video. So we will see first the example about the multi-object manipulation, and we'll come back on this video later. So for example, this guy wants to move a desk here and all the furniture of the desk. And you see in that case, it's very annoying because he has to grab the lamp, the mouse, the keyboard, and that's very annoying because he has to move everything one by one. So that's why they have proposed this solution to select several objects together and be able to move them. So, oops, maybe I can show you that again. So there is two options. So the first option is to select the object one by one. So maybe he will select, for example, here the lamp, the computer, the keyboard, and then he will be able to move everything together. Or the second option is to use a kind of brush where you select all the objects just by touching them. And that's it. And then you can move all the objects together. So here they do a kind of similar thing. They have this notion of container, where they can store a selected object. So for example, we saw before, he select the desk and all the furniture, and he can retrieve it in this history and move it again, and move them again. and that's on. So just now to finish this quick overview about interaction. So we see that we have navigation, we have interaction with object, and the last thing that we have is application control. So here I will not go too much into detail, but just to explain what is application control. So the idea of the application control is not control the virtual environment itself, but control all the parameters of your application. So it could be simply exit, pause the application, change a rendering parameter, select different tool or action in the virtual environment, and do a bunch of other stuff. And there is a lot of techniques that use for that. So at the beginning, they start to use some 2D menus, but I think you quickly understand that 2D menu in a virtual environment is not very good, and it's very annoying to have menus floating around. So then they start to use 3D menus, but that's also not very good. It's better because the 3D menu can be integrated in the virtual environment, but that's still a bit annoying. So the last option is to use a control tablet or smartphone or additional device to control all the rendering parameters. So for example, here you have an example where you can use a kind of a tablet to select all the different rendering parameters. I don't want to go too much into detail of this. So it's just to see that you have the three category of interaction, so navigation, interaction, and control of the application. So I stop here for the overview and quick introduction of mixed reality. And now we will focus more on what is collaboration in mixed reality. So collaboration in mixed reality usually involve several users. So it means that you have several users that will work or play together in a virtual environment. So you could have, for example, we talk about analysis of scientific data. So you could have two users, so one in France maybe, and one in the US that want to analyze together some scientific data. So they can maybe meet in a virtual environment and check together the data. You can also achieve some very complex manipulation in the virtual environment. So it could be some real manipulations that are very complex to do. So maybe you want to train first in virtual reality to do the manipulation. Or it could be also some virtual manipulation that you have to move some object in the virtual environment. It's very hard to do it alone. So but you can ask someone to help you. Collaboration in mixed reality could be used also for training. So you can, in one hand, have a team training where, like, for example, for the fireman, you want to train them as a team together and to collaborate, and you do that in virtual reality. So it's very used for firemen, military people, all this kind of thing. Or also a medical team in a chirurgical setup where they train together to like provide the proper tool to the surgeon and this kind of thing. You can train the team, and you can also train with a teacher that is far away. So this is also another good solution where you can meet your teacher in a virtual environment, even if he's in the US, for example. And he can teach you some stuff, and then so it could be very efficient. And the last thing is a social presence. So you want also sometimes to feel like you are close to your partner or your friend, and you can meet also in a mixed reality settings to talk together or to play or to do some activity. So there is two kinds of collaboration. Sorry, we'll see that there is a remote collaboration and what we call co-located collaboration. So we'll start first with the remote collaboration. So the idea of the remote collaboration, we saw before that we have one user that is immersed in a virtual environment through a variety of devices. But in the case of the remote collaboration, we will have not only one, but several users that are immersed in the same virtual environment. And of course, in that case, you need to synchronize the virtual environment to ensure that all the people see the same thing at the same time, have the same state of the virtual environment at the same time. And of course, in that case, they maybe not use exactly the same device. So for example, we can have this user that just using a single desktop computer and still have access to the virtual environment. But you can have another user that is using a virtual reality headset, a one that is using a cave system, and so on. So you can have a variety of devices, and all could be connected together and collaborate together, even if they are remote, which means in different countries or different places. So I will show you a few examples to illustrate that. So the first one is an example of remote collaboration in augmented reality. So we will see. I can play the video maybe and talk at the same time. So we see here we have I don't know what it is, but an object that you need to manage or maintain, and you have one person on site that will work on the object, and someone that has the knowledge about how this machine works and will try to help him. So this is the remote person. This is the local person will record the machine with this phone, and the remote one will be about to add some information. So you probably saw some time of this scenario. So here, he can show him some stuff. So select the thing. He can put annotation. We see he can also add a bubble message that say do this, do that. So here he put some annotation, he pause the video, put some annotation and send them back to the person. Well, this is one example, so there is a few things here, but you can have a very, very complex different thing. So this is one example. The second example is now remote collaboration in virtual reality. So for example, here you have two users that want to explore some scientific data. So you have one user in France and one in UK, and they will want to analyze together the scientific data. So the scientific data, I think if I remember properly, is seismic data from an earthquake. So that shows the deformation of the ground. And they will want to position a cutting plane, so something that will cut the data, to explore the inside the data and really understand how the ground deformation has been propagated during the earthquake. So I can show you the video. And so you see that there is two people, so one in each side, and they move together this kind of huge cutting plane, and in that way can explore the data in that thing. So they are remote. So we say that they are remote because they are in two different locations, but they meet together in the same virtual environment. So this is what is a remote collaboration. And now if we look at a collocated collaboration is a quite different scenario. So I will start again from this figure. So we have this guy immersed through several material devices inside the virtual environment. But now, instead of being alone, we will add more people with him. And so the people are in the same location. That's why we call it co-located. But they will be immersed in the same virtual environment. So I will show you some example again. So here, this is one example of a co-located collaboration in augmented reality. So you have several people around a table. They all wear some augmented reality headset. So the good thing that they can see is their collaborator. But then they will use the augmented reality headset to display some virtual information. So for example, here, I think it's a building. So they are working on a virtual mock-up of a building. And of course, you need to synchronize also the device together. But if you properly synchronize the device together, they should be able to see the same virtual mockup all together at the same time. And you see all these three people can work together on this virtual mockup. So it's like, but they are in the same room. So that's why we call it co-located collaboration. You could have the same also in virtual reality. So you could have co-located collaboration in virtual reality. So in that in this scenario, you need to integrate several users in a virtual environment with the same device. So here we will see an example of, I will show you the video just after, but you have a huge screen that gives you a stereoscopic view, so you can see in 3D, but will give a different view for each of the, I think there are six viewers maybe. So the six people are together in the same room, but they could see all together the virtual environment. And we will see in the video, it's quite complex because each one has a different position according to the screen. And you need to provide a unique point of view for each one of the three, of the six users here. And it's even more complicated because, as you probably know, that if you want to create the depth perception, you need to send to the user two images, one for the left height and one for the right height. And in that case, so you need to send 12 different images on the screen. And that's why, of course, they are using some glasses to separate properly the image and be able to see only their own point of view. So there are several ways to do that. It's quite complicated. So usually you can do two users. Six is very exceptional. I think they had to tune a projector. So if you look at the back of the screen, you have six projectors, I think. They tuned that one projector, two projectors are only doing the red color, two are doing the green, and two are doing the blue. And they are doing the image in a red, blue, or green at a very high speed, very high frequency. And then they use shutter glasses. So the shutter glasses, it's LCD glasses that will hide the left and right height. And of course, it's synchronized, and it's made possible to have 12 views. So six views for each user for their two eyes. So I will show you the beginning of this video, I think. Oops. So it's a quite an impressive setup. And we really see so you have the building here. We see that there is some deformation of the image according to the user position. To have this 3D perception, you need to modify the image that is displayed according to the user head position. And that's why if you add more people, it starts to be more complicated. I think we will see a good example with this statue. So you see that a second user is showing up, so they will have to display yet a second view for this user. So if you don't wear the glasses, of course, we see the two. But you have to understand that each one is only seeing one. And it can be easily explained. If you want to understand why, it's like the idea is that they see in 3D, so they see probably the statue going out of the screen. So they see the statue if it was here in front of the screen. And if the user is here, the statue has to be projected maybe here on this side. But if a user is on the other side, the statue needs to be projected on the other side. Maybe if I have a pen, I can do a quick drawing. So you have this, it's view from the top. So you have the screen that is here. You have the statue that is supposed to be displayed here in 3D. So if a user is here, he needs to see the statue at this position. And if the user is here, he needs to see the statue at this position. And that's why you need to have several statues displayed on the screen at the same time for each user. Oops. I don't know if we reached. No. And so all of them could have the correct perspective on the statue. So of course, if a lot of people, for the people that don't wear the glasses, it becomes messy. But But you have to understand that all of them have a correct perspective on the statue at the same time. So I will come back on this video later, because after that they want to navigate in the virtual environment. So it's also a bit complex to navigate when you are six people inside of the same room. But I will come back on that later.
So how are the glasses? So when I'm looking at it, I only see the statue I'm looking at, and I will not see the duplicates.
Yes, you will only see. I think it depends. You have several ways to do that, but it's a bit like when you go to the movie theater and you want to see a movie in 3D, you have to wear glasses. So there is several different technologies. So either it's shutter glasses that hide one eye after the other, and then it's tuned to the frequency of the projector. So when it displays the image for the right eyes, it hides the left one, and so on. So that you have like what we call separation in frequency. And you can also use, I would call that, like you can separate with polarization. Yeah. You could have different polarization of the light, and you need to wear glasses with a polarization filter that separates the left eye from the right eye.
Yeah, so in both cases, I only have two images that are put. The second one you're talking about is the blue and the red ones overlaid, right?
No. Ah. Yes. No, it's polarization. You put some polarization filter on the projector. And you wear glasses with polarization filter also. And
because in this case we have, for us in the video we could see that there were three statues then appearing on the screen. I'm curious how the glasses can filter
but
out.
So it's exactly the same mechanism. So there is two ways to do that. So one option is you combine a frequency separation. So in that way you have if you have six people, you have 12 images displayed at the same time, or at different frequency. So it goes very fast. So we see all of them at the same time. But maybe it happened one after each other, but with a very high frequency. And if you have the glasses that are properly synchronized, it will hide your eyes when it displays the image of the other. And when it's your turn, you will see one high, and so on. So you can do everything in frequency. Or you can combine also a polarization and frequency. So maybe you will have some polarization especially for you and polarization for your friend. And the frequency will do the separation for left and right eyes. And the polarization will do the separation for user one and user B, and so on. Yes?
So at any given moment, only one person, only one eye can see something.
Yes.
Frequency.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it goes super fast, of course. So if you don't wear the glasses, you see everything, because it's like it's a 60 hertz or something, or even more sometimes.
Is there a limit for the user?
Yeah, of course. You cannot put hundreds of users. Usually, the classical setting is to do like, for example, I don't know if you visit the cave. Some of you maybe visit the cave at LIMSI, so they can do two users, and they use the combination of frequency and polarization. So I think, if I remember properly, the polarization do user A, user B, and the frequency do left eye, right eye for both users. So in that case, they can only do two users and not more. And here they reach six, but it's very technical challenge, I think. And maybe you can reach a bit more, but it could be difficult. You cannot reach 20 users, I think. It's very hard. Is there any other question? No. So we saw collocated collaboration in virtual reality, but you can also do collocated collaboration in virtual reality with HMDs. So as you see here, these two guys are wearing a virtual reality headset, and they are doing a manipulation task of the front glasses of a car, and they are supposed to move it together. So of course, they cannot see the other in the real world, because they are wearing the virtual reality headset, so they just see the virtual world like this one. But they can still hear each other as they are in the virtual world, and they can also feel the haptic force that the other is putting on this front glass. So they can feel the force. So I think here they have done some tests. So Here they are using an aptid prop. So it's a kind of just a simple object that represents a virtual object. And here they are manipulating together, and they can feel the force of the other user by touching the object. And here they do the same experiment just by grabbing the object with a kind of virtual handle, and there is no, you cannot feel the force from your remote partner. And they did some tests of, I think, as you can guess, of course, when you can feel the force of the remote partner, it's much more easier to move the front glass together and to position it easily on the car. I will come back on the collaborative manipulation later. But as you can see here, it's collocated collaboration, but we see that it's also not that clear, because even if you are collocated, you cannot see the other one, which is a bit strange. So that's why I want to maybe compare a bit collocated and remote, and say that, of course, the limit between collocated and remote are not very clearly defined. So I will ask you some questions. So if we have two users with an augmented reality headset in the same room, as we saw before with the virtual mock-up of the building, is it collocated collaboration or remote collaboration? Collocated, because they are in the same room, they can see each other, they really are together. So this is clear. If you have two users in the same cave system, is it collocated or is it remote? It is collocated, but it could be a bit more complicated, because as you can have a different image, maybe you can use that to travel in different positions in the virtual environment. So you are together, but if you give the ability to both users to move in the virtual environment, maybe one can move in one direction and one could move in another direction. And at the end, they don't have the same view of the virtual environment. So it starts to be a bit weird, because they are together in the same room, but they are at different locations in the virtual environment. So it's co-located, I agree with you, but it starts to be maybe a bit more close to remote, because you are not at the same location in the virtual environment. So now if you have two users with HMD in the same room, is it co-located, remote? Is someone say something? Is it collocated, remote? I would say it depends. It depends if they're if they're in the same virtual environment, because they could be, even if they're in the same room, they could be in two different virtual environments. We'll see an example about that just after. So it depends a bit. It's not that clear. And even if they are in the same virtual environment, they cannot really see each other. So we can still say that it's collocated, because they can hear the other one, they can maybe feel the force, but it's also not very clear. Now, if you continue, if you put two users with HMD in different rooms, here it's easy, they are remote. If we put two users with some headphones in the same room, that's even more complicated, because like they cannot see each other, they can hear each other, so it's very close now to the remote setting, so even if they're in the same room. So it's a bit not very clear, and we come back on that. And I want to show you this funny video about unwanted collaboration. So I think I just let the video play, and we talk about it later. I don't have the sound. I don't know why. I don't think there is a way to put sound, but yeah, you don't need sound. So you see this guy is fishing, okay? And he can feel the force of the fish thing with a device. So on another virtual environment, you have someone else, using a kite. And the kite, he also feels the force of the kite. And then you guess the thing. That's why here it's not that clear. So they are in the same room, they are acting together, but they are in different virtual environments. So you see, you see some other funny example. But just to show that it's not always very clear and always easy. So because this guy is supposed to fill out some, I don't know, some stuff and move an object for that. And the other one is just sitting on the object and have the haptic sensation to be moved inside the world. We don't have the sound, but I think it sounds like the evacuation, you are doing the evacuation. Last one, I think, he's eating she is eating a zombie,
oh.
And the other one is receiving snowballs. So of course, it's complicated to set up, and it could be very done in some very, very particular setup and very particular virtual environment. But I found the idea very funny. So the thing to say is that, so we talk about this Milgram continuum where you are real and virtual on the other side, and we have all the mixed reality application on this line. But I think we can also add for collaboration another line that is remote on one side and co-located. And this line could be called a social presence, so how you feel present with the person. And if we put these two axes, we have a kind of design space where you can fill out all the collaborative application in mixed reality. So if we put again the one we saw before, so we have the, for example, here we saw the remote collaboration in augmented reality. So you just see the view of your remote person, and you can add a few arrows. So it's really close to the real, because the virtual is only a few arrows or a few text information on the object. So that's why we are very close to the real. But on the other side, we are really on the remote part, because we are far away. We don't see each other. We can maybe communicate by voice, but we don't have a lot of social presence with the remote person. On the other side, maybe we can put the one where you have six people inside the same virtual environment. So here you are really in the virtual, because you see the virtual environment. But we are also co-located, because the people are next to you. You can touch them, you can talk with them, and so on. And we can continue like that. The people that are working on the table on the virtual mockup are really on the co-located setup, but close to the real environment, because they only have the virtual mockup, but then they work around the table, the real table, all together. On the other side, we have the two people exploring scientific data. So this one is really on the virtual, but also on the remote. And we can add, for example, these two guys with HMD, they are co-located because they are working together, but because they cannot see each other, they have a bit less of social presence compared to the people that can see each other, of course. So we can put them a bit down. And if we want to place the two people that are acting together, so this one is even a bit weird, because they each one have their own virtual environment, so they don't really have a collaboration here. They have kind of collaboration, but only on the haptic thing, and they cannot see each other. They can maybe hear each other, but it's maybe not wanted in that case. So here, just to say that everything is not very clear. There is no clear category for each one of the application. So it's like two continuum
and so on. So after this introduction of collaboration in mixed reality, I think I will do a small break. I'm wondering if I'm doing the break now or if. Yeah, I think we can do the break now before I start this part, because then I don't want to stop. So we can. It's 3:50, so I think we can do a 10-minute break and we can start over at 4:00.